Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, November 26, 2015. Rebecca Nyandeng supports the U.S. government's call for the warring parties to return to Juba and implement peace agreement.
Things are not moving because all the partners in peace have not moved to Juba. So they are preparing now to move to Juba, starting with G10, and then the IO team will come also. So it's just logistic preparation, but everybody is going to Juba.
And a South Sudanese clergy who went to welcome Pope Francis in Nairobi says the Pope's visit has a message for South Sudanese.
The Pope said, with Christ as the center of our lives, let us not be disappointed. I'm really very convinced with my mission that I came here, and I got a message from Pope Francis. When I go back, I will be able to share to my people the strong words that I got from our Pope.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The SPLM former detainees are returning to Juba tomorrow to work with the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, or JMAC, on implementing the South Sudan peace deal. Rebecca Nyandeng Dimabior, who is a senior member of the ruling SPLM party, says she is accompanying the former detainees to ensure that the warring parties implement the peace accord signed by rebel leader Riek Machar in Addis Ababa and by President Salva Kiir in Juba. Pagana Mum, who signed the deal on behalf of the former detainees, is not among those traveling to Juba on Friday. Nyandeng says the return of the former detainees is a sign that peace agreement is holding.
I'm going back home, but I'm not anxious because, you know, situation in southern Sudan cannot be predicted. It's unpredictable. But for me, we have embraced peace, and peace has to be taken home because that's where it belongs. So peace was signed in Addis and also in Arusha, and both initiatives have to be taken to Juba so that we implement peace. We cannot implement peace in Nairobi or in Addis.
When I was in Addis on the 17th of August, I saw you breaking down emotionally. You were asking President Kiir to sign the peace agreement.
Yes.
Now that you're going to Juba, what message are you taking to President Kiir?
When I broke down, it was because I know if President Salva did not put his hand in the agreement, more people will continue to die. And why are we tearing our country apart when we are one people? And if there is any misunderstanding, it's something that would be resolved between us. But what happened in Addis, people were talking about position and what, and nobody cared about the people of southern Sudan. But after he has put his signature in the agreement, it's time for us to embrace peace and implement peace and bring security to people of southern Sudan.
You're calling for people to work for peace at a time the country is going through a very difficult situation. Members of parliament are not united on the President Kiir's order to create 28 states, and there is a new rebellion in Western Equatoria. How is this going to really work out?
You know what happened? Juba was taking decision on their own. They have not waited for their brothers and sisters who were partners in peace. They were supposed to wait. All those things were unnecessary. For example, if you talk about 28 states, according to my own view, 28 states was not a problem in southern Sudan. Our problem was not lack of many states. Our problem was economics, was insecurity, and lack of democracy. These are the issues that were lacking in southern Sudan, not because there were no many 28 states. If you create more 28 states, where will you get the money when you create 28 states? I see that it is a non-starter.
What message are you having for JMAC at this juncture where everything seems not to be moving as it should?
The former president of Botswana is the chair. He's a wise leader, and I hope he will be able to direct us properly towards peace because he knows what he's doing. But my fear is that during the CPA also, we had what they call Assessment and Evaluation Commission. That Assessment and Evaluation Commission did not have teeth, so they could not do anything. I hope JMAC will have teeth.
And when you're saying you want JMAC to have a teeth, to bite who?
to bind whoever who will make trouble.
And who is the troublemaker now? Because it seems like things are not moving on.
Things are not moving because all the partners in peace have not moved to Juba. So they are preparing now to move to Juba, starting with G10, and then the IO team will come also. So it's just logistic preparation, but everybody is going to Juba.
When you left Juba, I remember speaking with you, and you said the reason why you are in Nairobi is because you are afraid of your life in Juba. Has things changed now that you're going back?
We are in peace, and if people say they are in peace, this is what we are going to find. We have to take peace home, as I said earlier. The situation of 2013 was really a very bad situation. And I know in Juba there are so many different levels of government in Juba. Everybody is a power by himself or herself. But we will see into it that this peace, you know, in anything that you do, there are risks. And if you are a leader, you don't take a risk, then you are doing nothing. So what we are doing here, we have to go to Juba to implement the agreement.
That's Rebecca Nyandeng Dimabior, widow of Dr. John Garang Dimabior, South Sudan's founding father. Nyandeng has been in exile for 23 months after the conflict erupted in Juba in December 2013. She was speaking to me from Nairobi earlier today. The head of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, which is tasked with monitoring South Sudan's peace agreement and permanent ceasefire, is calling on all parties to move quickly to implement the deal. Festus Mogae says they are already behind schedule. Charlton Doki has the story for VOA from Juba.
Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission Chairman and former Botswana President Festus Mogae told reporters at a Juba news conference today that reluctance on the part of the government and the opposition to signing the security arrangements protocols has slowed down the implementation process. He says his commission is working with both parties to speed up the implementation process.
What we are here to ensure, of course, is that they honor their promises and what they are saying they are going to do, which is important, which we believe is going to take place. Admittedly, we did miss a number of deadlines in the past before the final document was signed, you'll remember. But now all that has been done, and what remains is for us to start doing our work.
Mogae says he has met with President Salva Kiir and armed opposition leader Riek Machar, both of whom have reiterated their commitment to implementing the peace deal. Today, Mogae traveled to the Jonglei state capital of Bor to meet with state officials and others to learn about what's happening on the ground. Bor has been one of the hardest hit areas during the conflict. Jonglei State Governor John Kong says Mogae's arrival gives hope to the people of his state that the peace agreement will be implemented.
Our people are in need of peace, and we want them to come back home from the refugees camp and displaced camp so that they come and enjoy the peace.
Mogae says there is evidence of the ongoing violations of the permanent ceasefire, but says it's too soon to silence all the guns across the country. Mogae says there are also technical challenges delaying the implementation, as well as a lack of funds to implement some of the protocols of the peace deal.
As you know, unfortunately, we rely on our partners. And the partners whom I met in Addis, and the partners when I met them here, early in the month, and when I met them 2-3 days ago at their reception, they all say that they are waiting for requests. They are pledging their readiness to help.
The Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission is being established this week in Juba. Mogae says he is in the process of setting up an office and recruiting officials. The Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission's first meeting is scheduled to take place tomorrow in Juba. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
Waki Simon Wudu prepared this report. South Sudanese leaders have missed the 90-day deadline to form a transitional government of national unity, which all parties agreed to implement in August. The August peace agreement stipulated that the transitional government will be in place by this time. The United States, along with its Troika partners, Britain and Norway, released a joint statement yesterday saying they are deeply concerned South Sudan's leaders have not formed a new transitional government within the 90 days timeline, which they say could unravel the peace process. The United States and its partners say each day the fighting and abuses continue and humanitarian situation grows worse. At the same time, the Troika praised Festus Mogae, the chairman of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, for starting the implementation process by announcing this week he will host a JMAC's first meeting in Juba. The Troika is urging the opposition and former detainees to take part in that meeting and warns that missing it will only deepen an already grave humanitarian crisis and prolong the suffering of the South Sudanese people. Once the transitional government is set in place, it will govern the nation for 30 months. A national election are to be held 60 days before the term of the transitional government comes to an end. South Sudanese women activists say enough talk. They want the peace deal signed by President Kiir and opposition leader Riek Machar to be implemented. At the end of their meeting in Juba this week, women leaders say time is running out for implementing the agreement. Waki Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
The women leaders called on South Sudan's warring parties to stop wasting time talking in cycles and to finally start implementing the peace agreement. Priscilla Joseph Kuch, who heads the South Sudan Women's Network for Peace, outlined the resolutions women gathered from around the country reached at their two-day meeting in the capital. Kuch says first and foremost, they want the guns to be silenced so internally displaced persons and refugees can return to their homes.
We acknowledge that the peace agreement has been signed. We acknowledge that the parties to the agreement has committed themselves to the principles, the stopping corruption, the democratic promotion. But we are saying as women, wait a minute, 90 days are gone, we are not seeing anything. So we are saying this is time to act, we want them to start implementing.
Coach says it became clear during the meeting that many women do not know the specifics of the peace agreement signed in August. She says once the women were informed of the peace agreement's contents, most of them agreed that it provides the only way to get the country out of the nearly two-year-old conflict. The women also resolved to be at the forefront of monitoring the agreement's implementation and are calling on the international community to hold the two warring parties accountable if they do not implement the deal. Coach says several women have been involved in the peace agreement's negotiations, but they want to see more women appointed to positions of power.
We want the government and the parties to go beyond those who are sitting in that meeting. We want them to consult with out there so that we can give them the names and the people who are going to represent our views, the people we know who will implement the women agenda.
Izedwa Derex Briggs, the United Nations Women Country Director for South Sudan, says South Sudanese women want to focus on the positives in the agreement.
The women thought it was time for them first and foremost to disseminate the peace agreement and push for the positive things in the peace agreement rather than what was not acceptable by all sides. They are saying everything that has been done or written in the peace agreement that concerns gender equality, there should be no further negotiations. They should find themselves into the permanent constitution.
Many of the 300 women who took part in the meeting say the discussions gave them hope and courage to play a role in implementing the deal. Women like Rebecca Chol.
A lot of people in the grassroots, they don't know. Me, myself, I'm from Lake State. I have no more knowledge about the agreement. But today, I'm very happy to be here, to hear there is some women who signed on behalf of us, women of South Sudan, which is Women Bloc. We heard them, and we know how they got there. They told us their stories. And we heard a lot from the UN women, from the African women who came to enlighten us.
Participant Maria Gideon agrees.
This dialogue gives me hope we'll achieve this peace. We hope this peace will reach up to the grassroots level. Even the conflict of the community will stop.
Gideon says enough is enough. No benefit comes from fighting. There is only death. She says she hopes the dialogue will make husbands listen to their wives and they too will help implement the peace deal in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudo in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Pope Francis leads a mass in Nairobi. Stay tuned.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how would your friends describe you?
As someone who is jovial, I'm easygoing, but I'm strict when the need arises.
My friends describe me about that. I am very clever girl and I am kind to them. If the exercise have come and they don't know thing, they do not understand from the teacher, I will explain to them.
Very warm, caring. I'm not praising myself though, but someone who goes an extra mile in helping people.
Well, a good listener and a great friend.
My friends are describing me as somebody who is polite, approachable, helpful to them in their time of need, and advisable because I do a lot in advising students or friends.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Australians are calling two South Sudanese-born residents heroes after they disarmed a man who was waving a machete at innocent bystanders. SINBO reports the incident landed one person in the hospital with non-life-threatening wounds and injured several others.
John Majura Kwok and Gutch Kot say it was a very normal Thursday night on November 12th when the two were headed home after watching a professional soccer match in Canberra. They hailed a taxi and both jumped into the back seat. Majura Kwok was sitting behind the driver and Kot was on the passenger side. They say they were traveling in moderate traffic when suddenly the taxi driver slammed on his brakes. Both say a man wielding a machete jumped right in front of their taxi. He then jumped over to the passenger side and began attacking the cab driver with the machete. Kot said that's when he knew he had to do something.
I just jumped out quickly and at the time I assessed the whole street quickly because I'm very familiar with that area. All I could see was just a lot of vulnerable people on the street, children and their families, you know, walking out.
Majura Kwok says the cab driver's screams were deafening.
And the taxi driver was just crying out, "Help, help, he stuffed me." So I jumped out from the other side and got jumped out from behind. And because he was on the other side, he was the first person to get there. And he tackled him, you know, and put him on the ground. And then I came and we all got him and we removed the knife from his hand. And then the other people that were standing kind of came on. And then within two minutes, the police arrived.
While Majura Kwok was helping the taxi driver, Kot says he knew that more lives would be in danger unless they apprehended the suspect.
Survival instinct just kicked in. I was like, whoever gets to the knife first gets to live. And I managed to get to the knife first and just pushed it away just turned him on his back and used my body to restrain him.
Majura Kwok says being in life-threatening situations is not new to him. He became a refugee as a young boy and had to leave his homeland during Sudan's Second Civil War. He eventually moved to Kakuma refugee camp. He says growing up there taught him he had to toughen up if he was going to survive.
So, you know, when I used to live there, things like this, you know, the incident that I was involved, you know, used to happen and you just had to depend yourself and sometimes depend other people from being hurt by other people or being harmed by other people.
Majura Kwok does not consider himself a hero. He says he's just one human being helping other human beings. He says he's just glad he could help. Kot agrees.
I don't see myself as an heroic figure or some sort of like an important person. I just think that, you know, the way I was brought up with ethics, you should do the right thing when you're required.
Majura Kwok says the suspect appeared to be mentally unstable. Court documents showed the suspect stated he had no recollection of the attack. He was charged with possessing a dangerous weapon with the intent of using the weapon against others. He was also charged with intentionally wounding and damaging property. The suspect is due to appear in court in 5 months. For VOA News, I'm Ian Bior in Washington.
From Washington, we move to Africa. In Kenya today, tens of thousands of people, including the nation's president, came out to the University of Nairobi for a rain-soaked open-air mass led by Pope Francis. VOA's Jill Craig was there and has this report.
Despite gray skies and heavy showers, Kenyans turned out in force to the University of Nairobi sports grounds Thursday morning. Some said they had arrived as early as 3 a.m. to secure their places in line, all to ensure they would be able to attend Mass with Pope Francis.
Wow, it's wonderful. It's what we've been waiting for forever. And I'm grateful to be here. And we will be blessed by the end of the day.
One man said he saw Pope John Paul II, the last pope to visit Kenya, in 1995. He and his wife woke up at 2 a.m. to make their way to the university grounds.
So we came this early so that we can be able to attend this colorful and most blessed mass.
In his homily, Pope Francis extolled family values, saying that Kenyan society has long been based on a deep respect for the wisdom of the elderly and love for children. The Pope said, for their sake and for the good of society, our faith in God's word calls us to support families in their mission in society, to accept children as a blessing for our world, and to defend the dignity of each man and woman, for all of us are brothers and sisters in one human family. And especially fitting because he was at a university, Pope Francis spoke directly to young people. He said, "Let the great values of Africa's traditions, the wisdom and truth of God's word, and the generous idealism of your youth guide you in working to shape a society which is ever more just, inclusive, and respectful of human dignity." His sermon was well received.
I was very fine with the Mass. I'm very happy what the Pope tells us. So me, myself, I'm very, very happy.
Earlier in the day, the Pope met with leaders of various religions, saying that the God they all seek to serve is a God of peace. Pope Francis mentioned three recent large-scale terrorist attacks in Kenya, at Westgate Mall, Garissa University, and Mandera, saying that God's name must never be used to justify hatred and violence. All too often, he said, young people are being radicalized in the name of religion to sow discord and fear, and to tear at the very fabric of our societies. The Pope arrived in Kenya Wednesday evening for the start of his first Africa tour. While in Kenya, he is also expected to make a speech at the UN Environment Program and visit the Kangemi slum in the capital. He travels to Uganda late Friday and then on to the Central African Republic Sunday. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
A group of about 40 South Sudanese traveled from Juba to Nairobi to take part in the first Mass in Africa, said by Pope Francis. Among them is Father Victor Robert Bartolomeo, the assistant parish priest of St. Teresa Cathedral in the Archdiocese of Juba. Father Bartolomeo says not only did he catch a glimpse of the Pope, but received blessings from the Holy Father. He tells Ian Bior at the Pope's message of hope and peace and acceptance of one another brought him to tears.
When I saw the Pope and the way he was praying and the way I saw the people, even when I saw him, I was moved with the prayer. Even my tears was coming from my eyes because I felt that the man of God came to visit his people, the people in Africa whom are waiting for that kind of mission so that they may be encouraged to go ahead in their prayers.
Describe the atmosphere to me when you were there to actually receive the Pope. Tell me what some of your colleagues were doing, what some people around you were doing. Was there yelling? Was there praying? Was there crying? Paint a picture of what it looked like when you were in the presence of the Pope.
People are very happy. Some tears are coming from their eyes. Some are praying. One of the things that I was very happy, since we came from South Sudan to Nairobi, we did not expect that rain would come like this. But with the arrival of the Pope yesterday, it started to rain when he arrived from 4 until night, until this morning, it was raining. And he stopped during the Mass and it continued also drizzling But after sometimes it rains, and until when you're distributing the Holy Communion, all the place is wet.
So you're saying that it rained. Does rain have any special significance in your own culture?
If the rain is coming like this for somebody, a big person coming and the rain is coming 2 days frequently like this, this is very important person. It means God really knows the importance of these people, and God knows that that is why he's sending his own people to come and with the blessing of the rain, to come and share the blessing of God together as a family.
So you traveled all the way from South Sudan to Nairobi. What prompted you to make that journey?
Yeah, I came from South Sudan to come and receive the blessing of Pope so that the Pope may pray for peace in my country, South Sudan, so that my people of South Sudan and other people of the other people, African countries who are suffering may obtain peace. And was telling to us that let us build a just society that includes all the people. And also he said, may we be always people who concern for the poor. And lastly, the Pope said, with Christ as the center of our life, let us not be disappointed. With all these words, I'm really very convinced with my mission that I came here and I got a message from Pope Francis. That is why when I go back, I will be able to share to my people the strong words that I got from our Pope, because he said, God is the God of peace. If God is the God of peace, then let all of us live peaceful as brothers and sisters in our society, the one we are in.
That's Father Victor Robert Bartolomeo. Father Bartolomeo is planning to travel to Uganda tomorrow, which is the Pope's next stop. He says he expects nearly 200 South Sudanese to join him. He was speaking to Ayen Bior earlier today from Nairobi. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. The SPLM former detainees are returning to Juba tomorrow to work with the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission to implement the South Sudan peace deal. Rebecca Nyandeng Di Mabior, who is a senior member of the ruling SPLM party, says she is accompanying the former detainees to ensure that the parties implement the agreement signed by rebel leader Riek Machar and President Kiir. Nyandeng says the return of former detainees is a sign that the peace agreement is holding. The head of that commission is calling on all parties to move quickly to implement the peace deal. Festus Mugai says they are already behind schedule. The former Botswana president told reporters today in Juba that reluctance on the part of the government and the opposition to signing the security arrangements protocols has slowed down the implementation process. He says his commission, which has been in Juba for the past 3 days, is working with both parties to speed up the implementation process. And finally, South Sudanese leaders have missed the 90-day deadline to form a transitional government of national unity, which all parties agreed to implement in August. The peace deal stipulates that the transitional government be in place by this time. The United States, along with its troika partners, Britain and Norway, released a joint statement yesterday saying they are deeply concerned about South Sudan's leaders have not formed a new transitional government within the 90-day timeline, which they say could unravel the peace process. And that's a look at today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
And that's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Utukuzwe by Solomon Mukubwa, Kenyan gospel artist.
Hallelujah. Ndugu yangu, Biblia inasema waabudio halisi watamwabudu Bwana katika roho na kweli. Na ni wakati huu ukiwa ndani ya gari lako, ukiwa ndani ya basi unasafiri, ukiwa unafanya kazi ndani ya ofisi yako, jiunge pamoja nami tumuinue Bwana, tumwambie wastahili, uko mwenye nguvu. Ikiwa uliamka asubuhi haukumwambia kitu Mungu, ni wakati wa kumwambia Bwana utukuzwe, uinuliwe. Tujiunge pamoja kwa wakati huu, tumwambie Bwana wastahili. Ikiwa unakuwa kwenye maombi ya kufunga na kuomba, ebu tujiunge pamoja, twende. Hallelujah.
Mungu wetu mwenye nguvu ni Baba wa milele.
Mungu wetu mwenye nguvu, Baba wa milele.
Hey, ni mwenye nguvu, Ebeneza, Baba wa milele.
We have been listening to Solomon Mukubwa with that song Utukuzwe. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Baba